Avenue will come to order for Tuesday, March 20th, 2007. And we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3114. And it looks to me as though we have some august members of the other house and a member of our house here to speak on that bill. Is that right, gentlemen? Would you like to come forward and make your presentation now?
Or maybe the...
You separate us.
That's right. I'm going to separate the power. It's the flower between two thorns.
Mr. Chair, it's obvious we're going to have a referee here right now.
Notice that half the committee's decided that they knew what we're going to do.
Actually,
y'all didn't get the memo.
Gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, Sal Escovel, Representative District 6, Medford. This bill comes as a necessity. Prior to the 2003-2005 budget, OICC, which is the Oregon Youth Civil Conservation Corps, was receiving $448,000 per biennium from the general fund, the 201-203 approved budget. After numerous e-board reductions to the 0103 allocation, the 0305 general fund for OICC was eliminated. Since 1996, the minimum wage has gone from $4.75 to $7.80, reducing the value of each OICC dollar by 64%. This bill will raise approximately $220,000 per biennium for the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps summer youth programs. This amount will bring OICC youth hiring power to approximately the 1998 level, as other OICC partnering efforts and an increased amount of from the ADT to help fill the gap. All additional funding will be used to increase summer youth hiring in each Oregon county. Nothing, I repeat, nothing will go to administration. OICC funds are leveraged 3-1 on the local level on the average. Each state dollar becomes $4 invested in local youth projects. In a few rural counties, OICC is the single largest summer employer for youth. And I believe last year that was the case in, I believe, Grant County or Weider County, if not both. The amusement device tax has increased 7.4% annually. As per device tax, that has not been increased in the last 10 years. This program that we are part of, and I'm very proud to be part of, is one of the most extraordinary projects you've ever seen. You have at-risk youth that work, come to work, enjoy it, and they learn things that they never thought they would actually are learning. And what I mean by that, they learn teamwork. They learn responsibility. They understand, after this is completed, discipline and how they need to work together. It's very interesting to see when they first start to when they finish. We were over in the Hermiston area, and they had cleared out a riverbank completely that was so overgrown that you couldn't see through it or over it. It was that high. And I think there was about 6 or 8 youths that completely cleaned this up and turned it over to the city for a park and for the city to administer the maintenance. It brings a lot to the table, but more importantly, it allows these youths to be part of something, and that's very important. I shall turn this over to Senator Prozanski. Is there any questions?
I think we'll hear from all three of you, and then we may have some questions for all of you. Thank you. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I also am here in support of House Bill 3114. As a good representative has stated, I'm Senator Floyd Prozanski, Senate District 4, which includes a large portion of Lane and Douglas counties. I'm here, as I said, in support of House Bill 3114. As a good representative has stated, this is a bill of necessity. It's also one of reality, of one that we should actually be embracing, because what we know is the OICC is a demonstrated program that does have results and does have a performance basis that it has actually been able to meet and document how it has, in fact, worked not only at the state level, but more importantly at the local level. It's very important for all of us to understand that what this bill will do is ensure additional funding that is necessary to maintain the summer programs that the Conservation Corps does rely on in reaching youth in local communities. Being a member of the advisory committee, both myself and Representative Esquivel have had the opportunity to actually work with the committee advisors, those that make up basically the board of directors of this fine organization. You will in a moment have an opportunity to see a DVD that has been put together. I had the opportunity to preview it at our last meeting in January, and it has a very strong, moving message as to how we can, in fact, and how we should, in fact, embrace the funding for such a great program. It's one that actually, as you'll see in the DVD, how it does, in fact, impact lives of young people throughout the state, those who in many cases are at risk of dropping out and tuning out and not being productive within their communities, but where they've actually been able to be a part of a community project only to come back and show and demonstrate to their friends, their family, and their loved ones their involvement in a community project, which has in fact embraced not only in their own life but their community. So I do stand in support. It's one, as you've heard already, the amusement device fee assessment has not been altered or adjusted in 10 years. It will have an effective date in January of 08 for both those machines that are in place as well as for new equipment that would come online at that time. And so we believe it's one that's reasonable. It will not have, quote, unquote, sticker shock for anyone, and it will be orderly implemented into our process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Senator Ben Westland, District 27. I, too, am here in strong and heartfelt support of House Bill 3114. Over the years, this program has provided as much good as any single program that we have involved ourselves in. And as the good Senator Porzanski alluded to during the lean years of the last severe recession, we were indeed forced to restrict its funding. But even if that funding had stayed stable, the issue before us is the reduced buying power impacted by inflation, which has dramatically impacted the reduction of their ability to do the great work they do. I know this is going, this is only a public hearing today. I don't know if any amendments that I had drafted to hopefully improve this bill have arrived at your good desk, Chair Barnhart, but I was just discussing with Director Adams the possibility, and we have yet to get this completely worked out yet. We wanted to see the amendments, or at least I wanted to see the amendments, of adding an additional $5 to the games machine tax, and that money be dedicated to scholarships for graduates of the Oregon Youth Challenge Program and the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. Oregon Youth Conservation Corps already has a scholarship function, so that would have to be woven in to those amendments. And the last thing we want to do is impact that in any way or create an issue that would make it more difficult for this bill to pass. But as this committee deliberates this bill and hears further public testimony, I would ask that that you keep that in the back of your mind when those amendments come out. And perhaps, as the chair, Chair Barnhart, you could ask more effectively our friends and overworked folks down in legislative council just where those amendments might be. And me as a mere senator doesn't quite have the authority, you know, you impact as you as the chair of the revenue committee. So I think that's something that would be appropriate for the committee to consider. And, you know, while I'm here, I just can't help but mention and laud an individual that Oregon has just recently lost, Denny Maloney. He was integral in the creation of the Oregon Youth Challenge Program, was a leader nationally in restorative justice in this great country and certainly this state. Just an incredible individual that had youth on his mind, you know, when he got up in the morning and when he went to bed at night. He was really a unique individual. He first proposed this $5 15 years ago. And if it's the committee's pleasure, perhaps there could be a mention in the bill in naming this memorial or this scholarship fund, the Denny Maloney Memorial. So just something for your consideration, but again, and most foremost, here in strong support of 3114, and thank you for bringing this forward, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. The chair was so rattled by the arrival of such an august group of legislators that he neglected to ask Mazin to give us the bill summary. So would you do that now?
Oh, I think we got one.
I think we know, but I'd like to get the official piece in, and then we'll take questions from the committee for the witnesses. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, not to be anticlimactic or anything, but the bill basically deals with the amusement device tax. The amusement device is a fancy name for your machine.
Pinball.
The lottery machine and so on, but that's an amusement device. There's about three layers of taxes that are levied on these devices and these machines. In the beginning, when they are in ORS 320.011, as they are started, there is $125 per machine tax. Then in the 012, if the each device exceeds $104,000 in net receipts of 1 year, for that device or for the place where the rest of the devices are located, there is an additional $50. And then there is an additional $75 if that net receipt exceeds $260,000. Now, these amounts of money are divided in two big pieces, 175%, 40.2% of that 75% goes to the general fund. Counties receive 47.1%, and 9.7% go to the youth programs. Then the second piece, the smaller piece, the 25 cents, all goes to the youth program. Then there is a third layer of the tax, which is in 320.013, which imposes $10 for each device. That $10 for each device directly goes to the youth program. There is about 2,122 retailers with about 11,500 machines. So you talk about $10 increase in the tax, you're talking about $115,000 a year, about $230 a biennium. However, we grew this in the revenue impact statement that you also have in your packet, growing these amounts, not by the same level that we grow lottery numbers by, because it's not a function. Actually, you could think of it as the lottery being very efficient, that it's getting a lot more money from the same amount of devices. You could think of it that way.
Right.
And in fact, that is what happens. Yes.
But it's an efficiency measure for the lottery. However, that the growth factor that we considered here would be about half of the growth in population, for the mere fact that not all the population would be using or utilizing these, but more like the 21 and above, because it's an OLCC regulated function. So that's what you have in your revenue impact statement of 234 and 0709 and 237.1. $6,500 in 2009-11.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I hate to ask to be excused, but I'm supposed to be in the principal's office. I've been reprimanded to the president's office.
And well, you should be.
Then I think you'd better go.
5 minutes later, I'm afraid it might be SWAT, so.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony.
Thank you.
Are there questions for the remainder of this august panel? Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate your testimony and your declared support for these issues.
Thank you
very much. Senator Butler. Representative Butler.
Questions.
Boy, oh boy, I can switch in a hurry, can't I?
Question to staff, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
The if I've got these calculated correctly, there's 125, and then when we're talking a very a device that's generating a lot of money, the 104,000 and 260,000. So it's potential the device is collecting $250 base, which is divided 75-25, and an additional $10, which is dedicated exclusively to the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. So right now the maximum fee is $260 on any device. We're adding with this bill an additional $10.
That's correct, Senator.
Representative. Representative.
Well,
okay. Follow.
Well, there is an additional
it's
part.
Catching.
Yes. The additional part is there is a level of sales.
Once
there is a level of sales, then there is an additional $25, $50, and then
right. So every device that is ginning up $260,000 or more has presently a $250 base. Plus a 10, which is the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, and we're adding another 10 is what this bill proposes to do. Okay, so it'd be 260 for those very, very high income devices.
Very fruitful devices.
Are there restrictions? Coming back to the first 250, which is divided 75-25, of the 75% that goes presently to the state, 47.1% goes to the counties. Are there restrictions on those monies to be used at the county for any specific reason?
I think
county general fund.
County general
fund. Okay. What of the 9.7 that goes into the general fund that is dedicated to youth programs? Do we separate that off, or is it specifically separated off, or it just comes to the general fund? And somewhere we use that in youth programs.
The 9.7, representative, goes to the youth programs as in the OYP. So it goes in the same way as the 25%, the other 25%.
Oh, okay. And then it also goes the same way as the next $10.
That is correct.
Which is presently on the $260 amount.
That's
okay.
True.
So really, right now, out of $260, $10 goes to the youth programs, plus 9.7% of 75%.
9.7 of the
right.
75% plus the 25%.
Plus the 25% of the $250. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was trying to build a map.
I didn't want to say that, Mr. Chair, in the beginning, thinking that it might be too many percents.
And I've written a formula so I can calculate it. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I have not looked at the statute, and so I'm going to depend on staff at this point to tell me exactly what an amusement device is. It is machines in our lottery?
I can actually tell you right now, because
okay.
Representative Bruin had the book, and I took it from him. So it's ORS 320.005, and it says amusement device means a video lottery game terminal. And then it goes on to describe a whole bunch of other things, but that's basically what they're talking about.
What are those whole bunch? I mean, does that include a lottery in a casino? I mean, and is it a video lottery? I mean,
including but not limited to any electronic, mechanical, electronic, or non-mechanical device that displays the ticket through the use of a video display screen, is available for consumer play upon the payment of consideration, determines winners through the element of chance, and displays possible prizes on the device. So it certainly would appear to apply to anything that had those characteristics.
But it would not be, no, it would not be a pinball machine because it doesn't give you a ticket. It just gives you free games.
Right.
Or chance in the case of a pinball machine.
Yeah, and there's an element, you know.
Right, and I think
my brother claims that there's an element of skill, but
and I suspect
ongoing argument.
Without knowing, I suspect that the definitions in here are designed to eliminate the pinball machine and perhaps other machines like that.
So it's basically
gambling machines.
Gambling machines, and it includes in the Oregon Lottery. And what about casinos?
Well, casinos, Mr. Chair, are located in.
Just say no, they aren't counted.
No.
I understand why.
They aren't
okay,
valid.
Thank you. I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah. In fact, casinos are illegal in Oregon.
Right. Gaming facilities that are operated by Indian tribes, sir.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. We have some other people who would like to test. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Gelser.
Thank you. I'm looking for just a little bit more clarification on the amusement device.
Yes.
So would it include non-lottery devices that display prizes, like those trackball machines where you win tickets and it's displayed on there? You win so many tickets, you can go and get this little stuffed animal prize.
Good question. If it meets these characteristics, it would be covered.
In other words, the question is, all that stuff at Chuck E. Cheese, is that included, or is it just...
Does it display a ticket through the use of a video display machine?
No, I don't think so.
This definition is very carefully drafted, so it only applies to the gambling machines that the lottery uses, I think.
Is that your
view? And actually, the machine, like in the 7-Elevens, is not included. It's basically the machines within the OLCC type of.
Chuck E. Cheese is out.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, when I go to Idaho and I use my credit card on one of those gas pumps in the state of Idaho, I feel like it's a game of chance. It's a game of chance. And sometimes I get a ticket and sometimes I don't out of the machine.
I say, well, I suspect you'll continue to vote against self-serve gas in Oregon.
Yeah, but that's a great
And Mr. Chair, as
Thank
I
you.
Promised always to bring you fun taxes.
And you've done it again. Thank you very much. And I would very much like to get onto my witness list if I may do so. May I thank you very much. I'm going to take people in the order in which they signed up. The first person on the list is someone who's more than 100 miles from home. Maybe it's Cindy Coleman Marshall, is that?
Mr. Chair.
Yes?
Could you drop the third on the list, and then I'll bring up the other two.
What would you, when you say who's third on the list?
Adams.
Oh, actually, you're second on the list. Ron Adams. Yes. That'd be fine.
Thank you.
And Cindy and you'll be on deck. That's fine. Go ahead. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Ron Adams. I live in West Lynn. And before I try to convince you that we should get an increase for the Youth Conservation Corps, I'd like to show a visual aid that would help describe what we do, and take about 8 minutes, if you can handle it.
Is that the DVD that was mentioned earlier?
Yep.
I think we are all curious about that DVD.
All right, super. Then I bring an assistant to do that, because I'm totally capable of pilot error that bombs everything, so I would not want to put you through what I do with the machine.
The Oregon Youth Conservation Corps was created in 1987. Patterned after the Civilian Conservation Corps of the 1930s and 40s, this agency is designed to enhance the environment, reduce high school dropouts, and teach youth work skills. OYCC has two programs. The Summer Conservation Corps provides work crews for locally identified community and conservation projects in all of Oregon's 36 counties. These jobs are often a teenager's first introduction to work and the environment. Second, the Community Stewardship Corps supports many alternative education programs across the state. CSC integrates field learning work projects with the classroom for students who may find more success in a non-traditional classroom setting.
I wasn't doing well in school.
I actually used to be failing most of my classes.
Pretty much what would happen is I'd run somehow, amazingly enough, get into trouble, even when I don't try.
Arguments with other kids, a little trouble with the teachers.
I wasn't doing good in the 32-plus kids per classroom, only one teacher.
So I had to stay after school for a while, and finally they just kicked me out.
So coming to Alpha with 12 kids, 15 kids to a classroom, and two teachers was a lot better for me in my learning.
There's more one-on-one attention with the teachers, and the other students that actually understand what's going on can explain it to you, so you understand too.
They work with you, and they tell you how to do it, and they walk you through it, and give you more time to understand what it's about.
These students are not dumb. They just learn in different ways, and they have different strengths and different expertise.
I haven't been to school for about a year.
Why is that?
Family problems, places where I was living, stuff like that.
Yeah, they are at risk, is, you know, a couple of them, but they, by the end of the program, they look back, and I can see that on them, that, you know, they probably don't want to go back to that bad attitude boys, you know. They want to be creative and positive about what they do.
Many times I hear them say, wow, I've never gotten a C before, or wow, I've never gotten a B before, or oh my gosh, I never thought I'd ever get an A. And to them, it's like a huge thing, a big accomplishment.
If it weren't for this program, I'd either be dropped out of school right now looking for a job, or I'd just be in another alternative school, probably not as good off as I am right now.
You work hard for something, you're going to reach those goals, or you're going to get to do the things that you enjoy doing, which I think for a lot of these students, they didn't have role models or mentors showing them that.
I grew up, unfortunately, in the foster care system. So I was bouncing around foster home to foster home. I found most of my mentoring at Alpha High School. Michael and Stefan both were crew leaders, and they really helped me and find my passion in the outdoors.
Being out in the wilderness and just seeing, like, firsthand, implanted it more than I really wanted to work and make sure this is preserved and stay like this. And I've had big interest in environmental issues and trying to, like, solve them and everything, basically, like, since I was really, really little. And so it's just kind of always been an interest of mine.
One of the big emphasis we have in Central Oregon for managing our forests here has to do with wildfire and reducing the risk of wildfire in our forests. We've learned a lot over the years about the role of natural fire in forests, and we are currently at a place where there's a lot more fuel in the forest than what would have occurred if we hadn't suppressed all the fires in the past. So all of our work now is focused on restoring these areas to the point where fire can burn in a way that isn't uncharacteristic or catastrophic.
Our students are getting beyond the four walls of a classroom to learn and experience the work life, and they're learning skills in personal management, being a part of a team, how to communicate. They're also learning how to problem solve. And so we've taken those career-related learning standards and applied them to jobs out in the community.
That's part of the reason we're here, is to you know, give them a opportunity to learn something new and you know, benefit their community. And as far as the bigger picture goes, it's Food Point County is a nonprofit food bank, so the food we're growing here goes straight to people in need, people that might be hungry tonight or folks that need a little help to get them through the month. Without these guys here in the spring, we wouldn't have the plants ready to grow and to harvest in the summer.
You know, I think the difference is we offer them something that they can believe in and buy into and have fun with. You know, a different way of learning.
While they're alive, they've never had the opportunity of actually getting to see what is beyond just high school, and instead of, like, working at a gas station, but something they can actually, like, use their skills at.
I might have another job, you know, find food or something, which I don't want to do. That's why I chose this job, because, you know, it's outdoors, you know, it's kind of my homeland, so it was a good choice. So I said, you know, it's cool, it's just being part of my history. I'm part of my history, you know. And this is, you know, one chance of a lifetime, you know.
There's something about having a group of high schoolers working together, some of them for their very first jobs, where they can build that sense of teamwork, develop a job ethic, and again, you know, have an area that perhaps becomes of interest to them. a group of kids who get together who know that they need to build this fence within this period of time, they need to do it safely, and they need to do it in such a way that it's organized, really pulls them together. They get ownership in the projects that they work on, and that's really a way for them to grow strong as a team. And they don't forget that.
Canoeing has proven to be a unique way to teach teamwork in a very practical, hands-on manner. OICC purchased 7 canoes and the necessary camping gear for the private grant to create the Youth River Stewards Program. While stewardship of the environment is the ultimate goal of the 3-day, 2-night floats on the Willamette River, teaching of teamwork is inherent any time youth paddle together or camp together. Important lessons about the history of Oregon's river highway system and the health and conservation of its rivers are valuable byproducts of these canoe trips.
We could not have the program that we do today without our partnership.
I believe the program that's created for the youth in Mill City has been a great program for both the community and the businesses, and most of all, for the kids who are at risk.
Other foundations that are willing to, you know, look at what we accomplish with these dollars, how far we can extend them through partnership, and really put some kids to work.
As an employer myself, I'm looking for kids who can present themselves well to the homeowners that we work for. If we can get a hold of them early enough and teach them that they're needed and they're an important part of this community, it benefits everyone.
Talking with other people in other states even, they say, wish we had something like this in our school system.
My experience has been really great here, and if you're not doing that great in high school, in school, I'd recommend coming here because it's a great way to get your grades up and get your credits to graduate.
I know I can't like change their lives completely, but I would like to just help them along the way and see like maybe if I can just do like a little bit.
I just feel the program has been just so good for Auburn. Since they had not had the program, I don't think they would have wanted to finish school.
It was probably one of the most outstanding experiences of my life.
My assistant left and I have to figure out how to...
Nope, she's behind you.
Oh, there she is. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting us do that. I threw in 3 handouts, and I'm not going to bore you with the details. The foundation talks about the 2 different primary programs, the summer program, and then the 25 alternative schools that we work with. The annual report is still in draft form, and we'll have it out fairly shortly. We had hoped for it by the time of this meeting. And then the third piece is just to yourself, Chair Barnhart, and it pretty much says the things that Representative Escobar already said, so there's no sense me repeating those pieces. I think the thing at the very bottom where it talks about the youth sponsoring power, where as our funding was reduced, especially 03, 04, 05, we had to reduce the amount per county from the 11,000 had been down to 10,000 for those summers. And we got it back up in 06, and it would be for 07. The fact is that the way over on the right, it talks about how many youth you can hire and for how long. And where in the 91-96 range, we could hire kids for 7.3 weeks. At current funding, with the current 780 minimum wage, we're down to about 4.5 weeks that we can hire kids. So that's really the gut bottom line of this request. I am no longer a state employee. I was director of the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps for 8 years, and I know a heck of a lot about this funding stuff, and I could probably answer until you get into where it describes the nuances of a machine. It's the video poker machines, Representative Berger. That's what it is. We've never gotten any funding from anything else. It's always been based on the number of machines, and that has gone up some with when they went to the sixth machine a year and a half ago, which was a lying machine, I think is what they called it. Unlike you, Representative Butler, I put in my card and I'm scared to death. I don't play the lottery. I heard somebody say one time, I remember when I used to have scruples, and I don't play it, but I love it because it funds this program. So I will leave it at that. I'd be happy to entertain any questions, and then either before that or after that, we can invite Mr. Hasty and Cindy up, who are the current chair and past chair of our advisory committee.
Thank you. Are there questions for Ron? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably directed back to some of the history on these machines themselves, but just a mechanical question. Who oversees the volume requirements of the video machines? I'm assuming that's the Oregon Lottery Commission that says every machine produces this much. Are we certain, now going back to the history, are we certain that this doesn't apply to other kinds of machines? I have had some experience in the past where jukeboxes and other music machines that money is put into, including coffee machines and back when you could sell cigarettes in a cigarette machine, those all had to pay a $125 fee, which I believe is probably the base fee. Those are not in statute anymore, is that correct?
That's correct. They're not amusement devices.
They are. They don't give you back money, some of those what you're
seeing.
So that is a requirement in the statutes that they...
So the jukeboxes and those kinds of things, none of those are at least the $10 or the $125 that was the original don't apply to this at all.
That's what I understand.
That's correct.
Okay.
Right there.
Thank you.
That's the definition.
Mr. Yeah. Chair?
Yes, please. Representative Berger.
Thank you. If I could ask Mr. Adams, on your March 20th memo to the chair and the committee, the form at the bottom, grants to counties, would you kind of explain to me how it works in the summer program? In other words, the grants, are there a grant for every county? How many actual headcount children, and I call them children, although, and that's another question, what is the sort of criteria for eligibility? And I guess I'm kind of trying to look through time and say how many kids were served this summer and what was the geographical, and it may be in these documents, I just haven't had a chance to look at them. So
not
you understand the tenor of my questions.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, it is not entirely in these documents. We served 701 youth last summer, and the way that we were able to get to that amount is because we leveraged these grants, and there is at least one crew in every county. It's the way we do it, and it's an equal amount in each county, and that's the reason that when Representative Esquivel was here, he could say that in some cases, we're the largest summer employer in some of the smaller rural counties, and that indeed is true. The dollars are leveraged about 4-1. We have to keep in mind that at least around 30% of that leveraging is with Secure Rural Schools dollars, where the county commissioners or others within the counties have joined with us because they thought the program was that important. And so if that goes away, and it's gaining on that, or maybe not, we don't know yet, then the leveraging is closer to 3-1 rather than 4-1. And I just need to throw that out because that's a reality. It costs us about $2,200 per kid during the summer standard six-week program. So that gives you a sense of what the $112,000 would do for us as far as the addition of that number of youth each summer. The current age in our legislation is 13 to 24. four. And the reason it goes that high is that that then carries the same limitation as education and also Workforce Investment Act, because we get some of those dollars. We dropped the age from 16 to 13 two sessions ago because we're losing so many kids in middle school that we wanted to create a program that could encompass them. Now, we've never funded it, but we currently have some middle school kids that we're able to bring in. The summer program, strictly talking summer, generally you go 16 and up, and that's because of OSHA rules and what they can use and what they can do. That's. I used to be a state rep, so I give 1,100 word answers to.
No, but it yes, takes no. More questions, Mr. Chair, if you'll indulge me. the tax increase that we're proposing here is dedicated to that summer program.
It is dedicated to the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps.
Not, or to the Corps and all of its programs.
The Corps is all of the programs, yeah.
But there are other programs besides summer programs.
We work with alternative schools. This funding would go to the summer program.
Okay, that's my question.
We don't pay wages during the school year, so we aren't fighting the same deficits.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
So the summer program is your expensive piece.
That's correct.
Because it's and the price of that is paying the wages of the students. Could I just ask one other question?
Sure.
Because I'm not familiar with this program. Your crew leaders, are those paid, and are they like college students? I couldn't tell. I mean, I'm at the age where a 16-year-old or a 24-year-old, they both look very young to me. And so tell me how those folks are found and paid.
Many of them are college students. Very often they're in environmental science programs. The young lady that you saw with, I think it was a Whitman T-shirt on, she is... she's in environmental science program at Whitman. She'll be a junior this year.
She's paid as summer work for her. Through your agency?
Paid.
Is that the question? Yeah. Okay. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Northwest
Youth Corps.
Youth Corps is an affiliate
yes.
of this group. That's the school in Eugene that
That's
I'm familiar
Eugene.
With,
yes.
right over the hill from where I live. And they have a school program as well as the summer program. And, mm-hmm. and so they participate in this yeah. summer program that we've been discussing
sure.
as well. That's a program that I'm very familiar with, and I didn't realize that these hook together that way. But
also,
they, of course, all of these programs, all of these small schools and programs find money where they can and programs where they can that fit into the business of trying to keep these students in school in a non-traditional program so that they are able to graduate and get on with
yes.
things. And so this is a piece of that, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a piece of the program, Mr. Chair. Also, Looking Glass is in Eugene.
Yes.
Is an affiliate as well.
Oh, I didn't realize
a partner
that.
As well.
Representative Berger.
One more question,
please.
Mr. Chair. I don't mean to dominate.
I think it's important for us to understand what we're dealing with.
Yeah, this program, have you over the years since it started, which was, what, 91, have you kept any statistics on your students, how they do, how many of them went on to get GEDs or high school graduation, and that kind of sort of data that supports... You know what you're trying to do with these kids? If you've got it, I'd sure be interested in it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I don't have it statistically. I think you have to grow to understand, as we have, that some of our students, and you heard the one young lady talking about being in multiple foster homes.
Yeah, I understand the students you're working with. I'm just wondering. It would.
We have raw numbers of students served, but where they've gone beyond that, they tend to be youth that as soon as they can, they leave, unfortunately. The addresses that we have, anyway.
Yeah, I understand. I understand the difference. I'm just asking because if you had it, it would sure be nice.
And we tried to follow up using Social Security numbers and discovered that got in the way of confidentiality, and we simply couldn't do it because everybody does and should ask that question. I just don't have the answer.
Okay, thank you.
I think that is a tough one to follow up on. Now, the way the program in Eugene that I'm familiar with works is that they actually go out into the world and try to get contracts for a variety of work. They work with the Forest Service. They work sometimes with private landowners. They will try to take on contracts of the kind that they believe will be beneficial for their students and useful within the context of their program. And so they actually receive some funds from the person they're contracting with to do work, in addition, of course, to the program funds that they have and probably some donations. Do other programs work that way as well, or are there a variety of ways that they tend to work in order to find the projects that the students work on during the summer?
Mr. Chair, there are a variety of ways that they find their projects. Northwest Youth Corps has been probably in business longer than any others in the state. They have acquired the ability to work more with the federal programs like BLM and,
yes,
and U.S. Forest Service. So they're a little more successful in that way. All of the programs will work across the board. An important point about the contract side is that we make certain that state dollars are not used on private land unless it's to the benefit of public land, which, you know, upstream weed removal helps downstream. So that we would agree to. Otherwise, not private contracts.
Okay. Thank you very much. Other questions for Mr. Adams? Thank you, sir. We appreciate that.
Could I ask then the other two just to
yes,
come up for a
yes,
second?
Yes, please. Cindy and Bill.
Could I respond to one? Representative Butler, I'm hesitant to add to your question. The basic charge that we're talking about is 125 plus 10. So that's what every machine starts out with. If the location, the six machines generate more than 104,000, then the $50 per machine kicks in. If the location generates more than 260,000 in a year, then the additional 75 kicks in. And the basic charge that we really can talk to is just that first 125 plus 10.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I appreciate that explanation because, and I've just been doing some calculations on the $10 in relationship to the $135. That is a significant, but I think the testimony was that it's been 10 years since there's been any increase in the actual tax on the devices themselves.
It has been over 10 years that I know of. I didn't go back and research that.
Thank you.
And while we're dealing with you, if you have a comment on Senator Westland's proposed amendment to add another $5 for scholarships for graduates, I don't know if you know about that or if you have an opinion about that or if you can say anything more about it. If you do, please let us know.
I haven't had a chance to research that. Senator Westland is a friend of mine. He introduced it to me about 7 minutes before he showed up.
Then we'll await further explanation
so
from him.
I will await to bring you back a thought about that.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair,
yeah, Representative Butler.
Can I just comment to that? I think that there's been a couple of excellent questions and allusions to questions relative to following these youth. That extra $5 to follow those youth into an absolute program where they were granted an opportunity for higher education would then give us some idea about recidivism and success in this program.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a ways and means discussion, and so they'll be held to a higher law in the ways and means process. I guess my concern is that we really haven't had any testimony relative to recidivism. It chafes just a little bit to be talking about $10 on $135, but if you're talking about $15 on $135 with some accountability for higher education and some tracking and monitoring as to outcomes and measurable performances of those folks, you really start to capture my attention. So I would like to hear and see more about that. Thank you.
Representative Butler, of course, it's a lot easier to follow somebody if they're getting a scholarship from you and have to file some kind of a report.
Yeah.
Please.
Cindy. Mr. Chair, for the record, I am Cindy Coleman Marshall from Harney County. And I'm here today to encourage you to support House Bill 3114. You all are familiar with the kid that cowered in the back of the classroom and begged, pleaded, and prayed to God to not get called on. I'm that kid. And I'm here totally out of my element because I believe in this program and wanted you to see a glimpse of what we have seen. I am a rancher from Harney County and a former watershed coordinator. I was appointed to the OICC 3 years ago. I am the current chair. We travel around the state and hold our advisory committee meetings. We try to see all the programs, and our quarterly meetings, our recent quarterly meeting was held in Union County. And I want to introduce you to one of the kids that we met there. We typically like to have the program coordinators, and then we like to see some of the kids. We try to go on a tour and have the kids show us, you know, what they have done. The kids typically, when we start our meeting, we're set up probably, you know, on a scale like I'm sitting here to you, and when we sit behind our name badges, we're probably very intimidating to them. You can see them hope to not be called on. This one particular meeting in Union County, I want to introduce you to this young man. And think of the character from To Kill a Mockingbird, Boo Radley. This is what I saw. This is Carl. There were about five students. Four of them were very animated. Carl sat in the middle, and he sat up so straight in front of us with this big grin on his face, very unassuming. The other kids were, you know, slouched and not sure why they were there. As they started to explain the program to us, Lad Marsh is a restoration. I'm really only going to show two photographs. It's not a slideshow. Lad Marsh is a ODF&W restoration project where they are restoring hundreds of acres of wetlands. It is a significant migratory flyway for the Pacific Flyway, and these kids are involved with many aspects of that restoration, and one of them is banding birds. And so as they were telling us, the adults were telling us about banding birds, I really didn't have a clear picture of what they were doing. And I couldn't imagine that you said, here, birdie, birdie, and the bird came up and gave you its leg. So I couldn't concept how they did this. So I asked if one of the kids could explain the banding process and how it happened. And without batting an eye, I'm sorry, Carl stood up and he came right in front of me. And the other kids sat back there, and you could see them looking at each other, and they were trying to decide if they should come up and help Carl. And I could almost see that they wanted to protect him. And Carl just launched into this explanation that was so simple, and it was so easy for me to understand. He probably outweighed the other kids by 75 pounds. His story was genuine and heartfelt. You could see the other kids sitting in the back watching him, kind of patting each other on the back that Carl was doing a great job. I could see that he was a special young man, but I wasn't sure how special he was. I found out later after the meeting that Carl has Klinefelter syndrome and spectrum autism, and he comes from of impoverished family of 11. To get the position that he had with OICC, he competed with 60 other applicants. And when Carl was interviewed and he was asked, why are you interested in this job? His answer was simply, I want to learn to work hard. Carl never missed a day of the program. They started at 7 a.m. and went until 2:30 or 3. Some days were longer. He was always early, and he was always the first one waiting for the rest of the crew. Carl was always the first one to volunteer for any of the projects that they had. When the program was over and the school year started, midway into the school year, Mary Wiggins, who's the program manager, was invited to attend Carl's IEP, Individual Education Plan. There were some of his teachers, his parents, a psychologist, and a diagnostic specialist, and they were there to review and create his new plan. Carl had improved dramatically in reading and writing. He had gone in 1 year from a second grade level to a sixth grade level. I'm going to quote Mary Wiggins. She said, all the specialists, everybody in the room was stymied, and the only explanation that they could give everybody in the entire room of these educational professionals was that it was his OICC experience, and it was the summer that had allowed him to gain confidence in himself and experience respect from other individuals instead of ridicule, and to feel a self-worth that he never had, and to have a positive self-image. I still get tears thinking about how unassuming he was. He wants to go back to work. He wants to work for Lad Marsh and for ODF&W. This is only one life, and there's hundreds of them that are affected by OICC. And I urge you to recommend passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bill?
Thank you, Chairman Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bill Hasty. I'm from Marion County. I'm the past chair of the OICC Advisory Committee. There are a lot of excellent reasons, I think, to approve this bill. You've heard the numbers already, and I think they clearly show the effects of the budget cuts that OICC has undergone, the minimum wage increases that has affected our programs, and inflation on a sort of on a county's ability to leverage funds on behalf of kids. Let me tell you what I think is really at the heart of the matter. It's really about a fairly insignificant fee increase that would throw a lifeline to local youth. Youth that just need a little help in turning a corner. A corner that, if left unturned, often leads to an unproductive life. Often a life that we all end up paying for in the long run. These kids are not thugs, they're not delinquents yet. We have a chance, they have a chance, to alter that course. That's what OICC programs give them. I've been an educator since 1972, when I joined the OICC Advisory Committee 3 years ago. I hadn't yet learned what OICC was or what it did. Since then, I've talked to dozens of kids, dozens of Carls, in those programs. Some of these kids I might have kicked out of my biology class when I was teaching. And that is what many of them have experienced. But what I've learned is that OICC programs give them what they couldn't get in a regular school setting. A feeling of what it's like to be part of a team, a sense of self-worth, friends, a sense of value for their contributions to their local community, a reason to get up in the morning, a framework for behavior and self-discipline, a reason to plan a future and believe that they can achieve that future. As I visited with the many OICC students, I've discovered that to a person, they have a more defined plan for their future and sense that they can get to that future than many of the kids that I gave A's to in my biology class. Frankly, that transformation is worth far more to Oregonians than the amount this bill requests. It's really the least we can do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Cindy for coming over. I've met with Cindy early on in her appointment to the OICC. I know her heart is in it, and I think this is a demonstration of some of the great things that can happen when the good folks of rural Eastern Oregon crawl in the middle of good programs and really make them heartfelt programs that we can get our arms around. Thank you again, Cindy. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, neighbor.
thank you, Representative. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony and the information that you brought the committee. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 3114? I'm not seeing anyone. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3114, and we'll open a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 47. And Mary will have a summary for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 47, Joint Resolution 47, I should say, will give, it's a constitutional amendment to Article 11 that permits the county to indefinitely impose an undetermined amount at this point of real market value for public safety in addition to and in lieu of allowable taxes dedicated to government operations other than schools. It defines public safety purposes and refers the amendment to the voters in the next regular election. As background for this, I can say that basically under current law, each local taxing district, including providers of law enforcement, fire protection, and emergency services, have budgets that are potentially constrained by limits that are imposed by Measure 5, which is the $10 governmental limit per $1,000 of RMV. This bill will give those particular taxing districts, law enforcement, fire protection, and emergency services, the ability to go beyond Measure 5 to impose a certain amount of additional funds.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Questions for Mary? We have one witness signed up for HJR 47, and that's Don Schellenberg. Don?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Don Schellenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. And right at the outset, I'm wondering, where is everybody? I thought maybe this bill was pulled or something, since there's nobody here supporting the bill or opposing the bill. But nevertheless, I'm here today in partial support of this bill. In my testimony last week, I spoke to you briefly mentioning that when applying taxes to fund services, that social services, such as education, should be funded by a tax based on a person's ability to pay, while property-related services are correctly funded by a tax based on property value. Measure 5 moved in that direction by limiting property taxes for schools, which forced the balance of funding for education to come from the income tax. That was a correct direction. As for property-related services, the unfortunate part of Measure 5 was that it eliminated local control and changed the property tax system from a tax-based system to a rate-based system. Under the tax-based system, law enforcement, fire, and emergency services could each have their own budget or a collective one under the local government, and a tax base with an inflation index, all authorized by the voters. Then they had the ability to ask the voters for additional funds outside the tax base for special needs. You see the flexibility and local voter control here? Under the rate-based system, with a tax rate limit, there's no public involvement. The system is simply a function of the assessed value and the local government's adopted budgets compressed into the $10 rate limit. No flexibility, no local voter control here. HJR 47 takes a step in the right direction. By removing law enforcement, firefighting, and emergency services from the Measure 5 property tax rate cap. What is missing is a voter-approved tax base, local voter control, with a reasonable index and the ability for voters to decide if they want to go above the tax base for special needs, flexibility. The Oregon Farm Bureau recommends that HJR 47 be amended to correct these deficiencies so that public safety purposes can be adequately addressed and then sent to the public for a vote. In looking at the bill, I would also have some concern. Line 6, there's a blank there. It looks a little dangerous.
that has to be filled in.
That's the problem. How would you know what to put there?
Well, you're going to tell us.
and And in my view, Mr. Chairman, that's the wrong way for this to happen.
Okay.
And the way for this to happen, actually, is to go back to the system we had before for property-related services, where the voters tell you what should be in that, what that cap should be, if you want a cap. More importantly, I think it would be better if we went back to the system where we had the tax base, the automatic allowable increase, a reasonable one, not 6%, maybe 3%. And then if the district had special needs and they needed to go outside that tax base to fund that special need, they would go to the voters and ask them for that. If the voters turned them down, then that would be the voters' choice. And that would be the end of that. But at least they have the opportunity. That's the problem we have right now with the tax system we have, is there isn't any opportunity to do that. This bill, in effect, gives somewhat of an opportunity, but there's no local control. And again, it's a tax, it's a rate cap, the way this is designed. It's not a, it doesn't provide for the flexibility that's needed.
Thank you very much. Questions for Don? We appreciate your testimony today. You've raised some very interesting questions. Are you thinking about preparing amendments, or are you simply making suggestions?
I would be happy to prepare amendments. I haven't done that yet. I don't know where this is going.
Neither do we at this point. We have some. I'm told that we have some other witnesses who want to appear on this measure, but who cannot make it today.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to actually reopen the public hearing tomorrow in order for those other witnesses to be heard. But your suggestions are valuable and important, and we appreciate them.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would, again, be happy to draft those up. I don't know what form I need to do that in, whether I should bring a draft to you.
If you have suggestions, I think that would be very useful to have them in writing, and the committee then could look at them further.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Anything else for Don? Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. And with the caveat that we're going to reopen the public hearing tomorrow, and that's all I need to say, isn't it? We're going to close the public hearing on HJR 47 for now. And we need to move to a work session on House Bill 2115. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2115. Mary?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2115 will extend the Forest Products Harvest Tax for Forest Research and Oregon Forest Practices Act Administration to 2008 and 2009 calendar years. It applies the Forest Products Harvest Tax reporting periods on or applies to these reporting periods on or after January 1, 2008. This is something which is a rate that should be determined, as noted previously in testimony, once the Oregon Forest Department has its biennial budget, and moves to Ways and Means to discuss that.
Thank you. And as I think everyone knows, this bill has a subsequent referral in Ways and Means, and the blanks in the bill, of course, it's not ready to be sent to the floor. The blanks in the bill will be filled in by the Ways and Means Committee in the process of working the budget.
Mr. Chair,
have I described that correctly?
I think it needs to have a recommendation to pass it to the Ways and Means.
Right, so we have to have a motion to do that. That's right.
Mr. Chair, just a question.
Yes, please.
This also, in addition to needing the 67 cents and the 55 cent amounts filled in, does it also extend the sunset than on the current forest products tax, harvest tax?
Yes, until the next biennium.
Right, okay. So for the record, we're actually extending it as well.
Correct.
Chair, I would move House Bill 2115 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Butler moves House Bill 2115 with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Representative Gelser, did you have something?
Oh, I was just going to move.
Oh, so, okay.
Thank you, Mr.
He beat you to it. Is there any further discussion? Any objections? Please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. Yes.
Representative Gelser. Aye.
Representative Olson. Yes. Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is adopted, and the bill goes to Ways and Means. Is there anything further on the work session? If not, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2115, and our agenda having been exhausted again for today, the committee is adjourned.